I have these electrical face pains that are intensely, intensely painful. I can get so much pain that it becomes difficult to talk, difficult to swallow, difficult to function. And so fortunately, I've been able to connect the dots to realize that very close connection I have between what I eat and my quality of life.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio. And we don't want you to worry about taking too many notes, so you can join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club, and we'll send you the transcripts and show notes from every episode. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, it's just my honor and pleasure to be with you here on another brand new episode. I am so excited. I'm not going to give you any of the details of what's going on in my own life like I normally do at the beginning, because we have an awesome guest and we're going to talk about some really timely topics tonight. Let me introduce Dr. Terry Walls. You probably know the name already, so I won't go deep into her bio. She'll share a little bit about her history. But she is the author and inventor researcher behind the Walls Protocol. And her whole history started out of a diagnosis of MS. So I'm just going to leave it there. She's got a brand new book coming out. I'm so excited. It's coming out it came out this week. We're a couple days behind the thing. I think it came out on the 17th. So congratulations on your revised brand new book, Dr. Walls.
Thank you so much.
Oh, so exciting. And I just see that it's doing gangbusters. So congratulations on that too. Now, most people probably in the autoimmune community know of your protocol and a little bit about your history, but let's just take a couple of minutes and, if people are unaware, dive into that.
Sure. So I'm a professor of medicine at the University of Iowa with a very conventional approach to medicine. And then in 2000, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis on the basis of a new weakness in my left leg. And I knew I wanted to treat my disease very aggressively. So I did some research, found the best MS center in the country, saw the best people, took the newest drugs, but I went relentlessly downhill. Now, within 2 years, my physicians had told me about the work of Loren Cordain. I read his books and implemented a paleo diet in spite of having been a low-fat vegetarian for 20 years. I continued to go downhill. The next year, I needed a tilt-recline wheelchair. Then I was on mitoxantrone. And then I was placed on Tysabri, and relentlessly I declined. Now, fortunately for me, I discovered the Institute for Functional Medicine. I took their course on neuroprotection. I'm also a scientist. I'm doing my own read of the basic science literature. And I began experimenting with vitamins and supplements. And I slow my decline. My fatigue is not quite as severe. But then I had this really big aha moment. Like, what if I redesigned my paleo diet based on what I had learned from functional medicine, from the ancestral health movement, from my read of the basic science? In integrating all of that, I redesigned the paleo diet. I went back to my meditation. I was working with my physical therapist to use electrical stimulation of muscles. And I did all of that to slow my decline. But to my amazement, you know, my trigeminal neuralgia, my electrical face pains, they resolved. My brain fog resolved. My fatigue resolved. And then my physical therapist said, Terry, you're getting stronger. He had me start lifting weights. And then 6 months into this, I got on my bike for the first time in 6 years, and I biked around the block. My wife's crying. My children are crying. I'm crying. You know, and if I talk about it for very long, I'll start crying, because that was
for sure
such a miraculous day. And then in 6 more months, my wife is seeing that there's a courage ride, 18.5 miles. She signs me up. And in fact, I'm able to do that ride. And so once again, you know, my kids are crying, my wife is crying, I'm crying. And of course, you know, this experience has radically changed how I think about disease and health. It will radically change how I practice medicine. And it will ultimately change the type of research that I do. And now this is what I research, how we use diet and lifestyle to reduce symptom and to improve quality of life in the patients with MS.
Now, a couple of questions. I've radically changed my diet after my diagnosis, which was not MS. It's another autoimmune condition. In your experience, you've found that this change in diet and other lifestyle choices has helped people that are experiencing other types of autoimmune as well as MS.
Yeah, you know, so I had changed my practice. I was at the Iowa City Veteran Affairs Hospital. So I was in the traumatic brain injury clinic and the primary care clinic. Marvelous results across a wide variety of disease states. The VA asked me to develop my own clinic, which we dubbed the Therapeutic Lifestyle Clinic. And when I went to the pain clinic and to primary care and said, give me your most difficult cases, but people need to know they're not going to get drugs. We're just using diet and lifestyle. And so people got sent to me. And we had remarkable results for people with rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, psoriatic arthritis, inflammatory bowel disease, myasthenia gravis, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, and of course the usual primary care kinds of things, obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and then mental health stuff like anxiety, depression, bipolar, PTSD, and the traumatic brain injury folks, people with post-concussive headaches.
Wow, it's amazing. Now, I want to jump right into the protocol, and diet is the primary part in my mind. One of the things that was interesting to me is I'm familiar with the paleo, and yet I would say this was like a plant-heavy paleo.
So actually, it's a very plant-heavy paleo. You might sort of think of it as a merger of a Mediterranean diet and a paleo diet, taking sort of the best aspects of both. And the other thing that I've done is I've created sort of a stepwise fashion to go from their standard American diet to the Mediterranean diet to level 1, level 2, level 3, and the elimination diet. So I can work with people to steadily improve the quality of their diet. When I designed this, to stress the nutrients that science said, again, the basic science, said were really important towards mitochondrial function, to improving cellular function, improving overall development of neurotransmitters. And that was my focus. And so actually I reduced my meat, added more vegetables, and added vegetables in a very specific way. And as much as I love the paleo diet, and everyone knows I'm a huge fan of the paleo diet, I have to remind everyone that it was not enough to recover me. Now, part of that is, you know, I'd had my trigeminal neuralgia for 20 years. And so I had probably much more extensive disease and clearly continued to decline even 4 years after I adopted the paleo diet. So when I redesigned my paleo diet in a very specific way and added in, you know, targeted supplements, the meditation, the exercise, the stem, that's when the magic happened. And it happened. It was breathtaking speed. You know, in 2007, I was so weak, I could not sit up in a regular chair. I was beginning to have brain fog. I had profound fatigue. I was exhausted by 10 in the morning. And my trigeminal neuralgia, those electrical face pains across my face and jaw, were more frequent, more severe, and much more difficult to turn off.
Wow. That's amazing. One of my questions as you went through that was, I'd run down rabbit holes, Dr. Walls. So what kept you going? I can't imagine after 4 years of the paleo and then going, there's an answer. What kept you going?
Viktor Frankl is a psychiatrist who was imprisoned in Auschwitz. And he wrote this really marvelous book, Man's Search for Meaning. And one of his premises is that between every event in our life and our response, there's a space. And in that space, you make a choice. So when I was diagnosed, my children were 8 and 5. Pretty rapidly, I'm in a wheelchair. I had thought I was going to teach my children to be successful adults, emotionally and financially, through athletic activity, through wilderness travel, through martial arts, through sports. But, you know, clearly that was not going to be an option. But I knew I needed to, that was my why, my purpose, my mission. And every day I'm like, okay, I can still model, you don't give up. You keep going to work. That, yes, life is not fair. But if I gave in, if I gave up, I'm modeling that when life gets difficult, you just give up. And I knew that was not what I wanted to model. And so every day I did my little workout, which of course kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller as I was getting more and more disabled. As I'm doing, you know, my swimming, because we put a pool in my house, my endless pool, as I was doing my swimming, my little mantra in my head was, your kids are watching. And then finally when my coordination was so bad, I couldn't swim anymore. And I'm just doing a little bit of pool aquatic exercise and stretching. Again, my mantra is, your kids are watching. You know, and both of my kids, at about the same age for each of them, as I could do less and less, we were giving my children more and more chores. And so they're, you know, helping set the table, helping with the laundry. And, you know, my children are very upset. Mom, none of my friends know anything about laundry soap. They know nothing about dryers. This is so unfair. And I'm like, oh yeah, man, I understand. This is unfair. And you know, it's really unfair that I'm not able to do this. Yeah, that's not fair. I said, and it's really not fair that I have MS and that life's getting more difficult, but I have to go to work every day and you have to do your chores every day. And yes, it's too bad, but life is not fair. And so they'd stamp their feet and say, Mom, I think you're glad you have MS. You can lecture me about chores. And of course, they're both horrified that I tell that story now. But I reassure them that all the adults understand that was age appropriate, you know, crazy talk that kids
absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
At that time. You know, it was sort of interesting as I recovered and I would talk about the gifts that I got from having MS and the gifts I got from going through the years of trigeminal neuralgia. It has been a huge gift. I've learned so much and I've benefited so much. And so my kids, you know, and they're, as I was recovering 5 years ago, they're like, this was no gift. They just really struggled to hear me talk about MS ever being a gift. But now, you know, my son is 28, my daughter's 25. And I have heard them talk about the gift of growing up in our house and everything that having to watch me go through my MS taught them. So they eventually began to see some gifts too. It took them a few more years though.
That's a marvelous thing about as your kids become adults, occasionally they see.
They get some insights. You know, and it's so fun having these conversations with your adult children now.
Yes, it is. Although I have to say, just my own sideline, sometimes it's hard to be the parent of an adult child because you can have great conversations and sometimes you just have to see the train coming.
That's right. You just have to you never give advice. I don't give advice. If they ask my opinion, I can give my opinion at that point, but advice is never welcome.
Yeah. That's my big learning, but that's not just with my kids. I find that that's with my friends and family too. So what a wonderful rabbit hole. I'm glad I asked that question. I'm going to circle back around to one of my questions. I just want the audience to know, we talked about things like mitochondria and things. Now, it's my understanding that mitochondria is sort of the powerhouse of the cell. But let's talk about some of those words that we tossed around just so we can have a understanding of what these vitamins and nutrients and supplements are trying to do.
So about 1.5 billion years ago, the oxygen level rose in the atmosphere, killed off about 98% of all life. Now, fortunately, because of the gradual mutations that occur over thousands and millions of replications, we eventually developed the enzymes to utilize that oxygen more efficiently in these ancient, ancient bacteria. And then those ancient bacteria got engulfed by bigger bacteria and developed into a very cooperative symbiotic relationship that allowed that organism to thrive and become animals and eventually mammals and eventually primates and, of course, eventually us. These ancient bacteria are the forerunners of our mitochondria, and they utilize oxygen in the process of converting the food we eat into the ATP, or the chemical energy, that we will use to drive the chemical reactions of life. It is vital that our mitochondria work well, because that is what allows all of our tissues, all of our organs, all of our cells to work well. And the parts of our body that need the most energy to work well have the most mitochondria per cell. So that'll be things like our brain, our retina and our eyes, because that's the movie camera, our heart. Those are very, very dependent on mitochondrial efficiency to work well. And so when I was reading the basic science earlier, I'd reached the conclusion that mitochondrial dysfunction, not working well, is what drives disability in MS. In that my illness, I'd had like two relapses in the whole course of my illness. Otherwise, it was this relentless, slow decline. And so I said, okay, for you, the big problem is the mitochondria. And so I spent a lot of time researching what supplements, and then as I reconfigured the supplements into foods, how to structure my diet for the most efficient mitochondria that's possible.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I wanted to ask about the foods slash supplements. And in your book, it's obvious that you're a fan of all the supplements, but you lean very heavily on how do I find that in the foods and where do I get it in the natural state?
So what I want to point out to people is in science, there's this thing called epidemiology, where we look at what are the factors associated with the best health outcomes. And so we do a variety of nutrition studies that look at the nutrients that predict the best health outcomes for MS or for low cancer risk or low heart disease risk or low all-cause mortality. And so then we think, aha, this looks like a really great idea. So now we're going to do a intervention study where I give just that supplement in pill form. So we can identify this a list of nutrients that are really, really good for you. But when we give it to people in supplements, it's very disappointing, because food is vastly more complicated than supplements. When we look at nutrients in an epidemiologic study, it's a marker of something that's more complicated. So when I was relying on supplements to support my mitochondria, I was able to reduce my fatigue somewhat, slow the speed of my decline somewhat, but I was not getting better. I was still declining, and my fatigue, I was still pretty fatigued. And now I was beginning to have brain fog, and my pain was, you know, getting steadily worse. And the paleo diet, of course, hadn't stopped anything, but I'd stayed with that because the science seemed to make sense. At least I was doing something. It was when I reorganized my paleo diet using those nutrients as markers of, these are the things that I have to increase. And that took me several months to get it researched. What were the foods that were rich in those nutrients? When I did that, you know, in 6 months, I'm out of the wheelchair. My pain is gone. My fatigue is gone. My brain fog is gone. I'm walking around, and I bike for the first time. And when I started, I had severe brain fog. I had brain fog that was troublesome. Severe pain, severe fatigue, and I could not sit up.
Amazing.
And in 12 months, I'd done an 18.5 mile bike ride. And what had changed was the food. I still had those targeted supplements. Because I was getting stronger, my physical therapist was able to do do this much more sophisticated neuro rehab program.
Let's talk a little bit about the foods, because I know when, as I was reading it, and I also watched your wonderful TED Talk, everyone check out her TED Talk on mitochondria as well. It's a great TED Talk. Is the 3 cups of green leaves, the leafy greens, the 3 cups of sulfur type veggies, and then the 3 cups of colorful fruits and veggies. My first thought was, Lordy, that's a lot of veggies.
Absolutely. Now, keep in mind, I'm a tall lady, 6 foot tall. My clinical practice at that time was the Veteran Affairs Hospital. So 80% of my patients were men. And so for a man, 9 cups of vegetables, easy to do. For a tall woman, easy to do. For a petite ballerina, yeah, that's probably, you know, too much for her. So I'm not asking people to overconsume. Basically, I want you to have sufficient protein and plenty of vegetables and a few berries according to, you know, your size and your workload. Now, some of my vets were you know, young guys from the Iraq War. They're still in pretty good shape. So, in fact, they're, you know, eating 12 to 15 cups of vegetables because they're hungry. Now, they're working hard.
Are we talking like before we cook them? So that's kind of, that takes up a lot of space to make 3, you know, it's fluffy and everything, versus 3 cups of cooked kale. That's a lot of cooked down kale.
Correct. So for the greens, it's 3 cups. So it's 6 cups before you cook it. So when it comes down, it'll be really much, much smaller, probably about a cup and a half.
Okay.
For the cabbage, broccoli, that's going to be measured raw, and it'll cook down.
Great. Thank you. That makes me feel a lot better. I'm thinking of a 3-cup pile of something I'm like, that's a lot.
And the way to think about that is a palm-sized serving of protein. If you're meat eater, so that's meat, poultry, fish, and then vegetables or some fruits. You might think about that as about a quarter of the plate is your protein and 3/4 the plate are non-starchy vegetables and berries.
Okay, great.
And you have as many plates as you need to. That's another way of thinking about that.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that surprised me, though, I want to get to the colorful part, too, because I love fruit, but I love all types of fruits. And a lot of your focus is primarily on berries. But let's talk about, can we have the other fruit?
It depends in part on your goals. If you're overweight or obese, now I want to really restrict the fruit to berries, cherries, and no more than 1 to 3 servings at most. I want most of the stuff to be non-starchy vegetables. If you're skinny or underweight, then having more fruit is fine. The more fruit we have, the more carbs you'll have, and you may end up having more carbs than what I want you to have, really. So my preference is between 50 and 100 grams of carbs in the day, certainly no more than that. But I don't want to make things complicated by having people keep track of their carbs. So it's, and I try to teach people how to do the Walls protocol in a 20-minute clinic visit, where I'm having them understand the connection between what they eat and what they do and their health, and then how to implement green sulfur color and a source of protein, walk in meditation. I do all that in 20 minutes. So I want to have a simply taught, easily understood, easily remembered message.
Fantastic. And we're going to leave it right there as we take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk to Dr. Walls some more about, there's so much talk about food allergies and eliminating whole groups of food. So we're going to talk about that kind of information that we get all the time when we come back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living. A chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. a philanthropic organization. Their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenil and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenil.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And tonight we're here with the amazing Dr. Terry Walls, the author of The Walls Protocol, as well as other great programs and ways that we can help ourselves through our autoimmune journey. And I'm absolutely fascinated by her story of recovery from MS, as based on, I'll say, mostly nutrition. There she's done other things, mindfulness and things like that. But one of the things, Dr. Walls, I want to jump on, because I hear it all the time, and I actually, in my mind, have a few food sensitivities. I notice that gluten gives me headaches. But what is this about food allergies, and do we worry about it on your protocol?
Yes. So we have foods that we exclude because they're at risk of causing an adverse reaction, and foods that we stress or recommend. On the foods to exclude, gluten, dairy, and eggs, those are the three basic I want everyone to take out. And then you may, after 90 days, retest to see if you can tolerate eggs. And some people will tolerate the eggs. Gluten and casein, so gluten, the protein in grain, casein, and many common grains, wheat, rye, barley, casein, the protein in dairy, can be recognized and develop an abnormal immune response that rev up your innate immune cells, drive up your cytokines, and increase your inflammation. In my case, if I have any of those three foods, the gluten, the casein, or the eggs, I'll begin to have abnormal sensation across my face, and then those electrical jolts of pain from the trigeminal neuralgia. And so I have everyone start removing those three foods, and then we ramp up the green sulfur color in a source of protein. And I have a different set of directions for the vegetarian and vegans than I do for the meat eaters. Now, there are people who don't get a sufficient response to this gluten, casein, and egg removal, or who have inflammatory bowel disease or rheumatoid arthritis or disease involving their joints. They're more likely to have to go on a more aggressive elimination diet. And they will probably need to remove also nightshades, that is tomatoes, potatoes, peppers, and eggplants. And I have them take out all grains, all legumes. And then if they're having nuts or seeds, I have them soak them overnight because we're trying to reduce the lectins. And lectins are a compound that plants make. You can think of that as an insecticide that the plant makes to kill the insects and other things that are trying to eat the plant.
I didn't know that. Wow. Okay. What a great visual.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what happens is, depending on your underlying genetics, you may be more susceptible to those lectins. I'd say most people are not. And in our clinics, most people do perfectly fine with walls level one or level two. But again, some people don't get enough response. Then we go on to the elimination diet. Or if they are having problems with inflammatory bowel disease or a autoimmune disease involving their joints, those I suggest the elimination diet. And you know, for some people, they're like, "Oh, that's too hard." I'm like, "Okay, that's fine. We'll start where you're ready to start." and make changes more incrementally.
You know what I find interesting, though? I just want a little rabbit hole here about that's too hard. That wanders through my mind. The little person on my shoulder might jump up and say, oh, that sounds hard, Sharon. Yet I often talk myself out of it. Like, yes, well, is the pain or the headache or whatever list, it seems just as hard or harder.
But people are ready to make the changes at the time they're ready to make the change. What I've learned from my time with the vets at the VA is that I'm not into arguing with my patients. Let's say you came to see me and I said, look, you have inflammatory bowel disease. You're probably going to need the elimination diet. And then I described it. And if you're not ready, we can start further down with a simpler program. And we can start the Mediterranean diet or removing gluten, dairy, and eggs and just do Walls level one. Either of those possible for you. And you'll either say yes or no. And if you say no, like, okay, well, what I'll have you do then is work with my dietitian to improve your diet, or just go back to your primary care doc, work with them. And if you decide at some future point you're ready to work with us, give us a call. I'm not going to argue with you because I don't know what's going on. It might be that your spouse is dying of pancreatic cancer, and this really is not the right time for you to take on that stress. So I offer choices, I offer possibilities. I explain why I've made that recommendation. And they're ready or not. If they're not ready, then I can offer another alternative. And if they're not ready for that, like, okay, that's fine. I can have you work with the dietitian if you're interested. Or just go back to your primary care doc and come back when you're ready. Mm. And that has worked beautifully for us.
Oh, I'm sure it has. I'm the type who finds out she gets diagnosed with an autoimmune disease and, gosh, jumps into the research and then starts a podcast.
Yeah.
So we're all different.
We're all different. You know, and we have to be empathetic. When we look at our friends, our colleagues, our extended family, we all have people that we love and care about who are addicted to sugar or who may be addicted to tobacco or may have a substance abuse problem or may have had a problem with gambling. And we know people that we love and care about who struggle with that addiction. So it's painful. It grieves us to watch them, and we're ready to help them. We'll still love them. And unfortunately, the food companies have learned how to create foods and hire food scientists at very good money to design foods that create cravings, addictions, dependence, and withdrawal symptoms if you aren't getting your fix of those high sugar, high glycemic index foods with all these food additives in them.
And also, so often they're socially acceptable and are part of our culture. When you watch the commercials and things, people are having a good time while they're eating a variety of these things.
There's a whole host of reasons why it is so difficult, which is also, as I listen to the political debates about the healthcare problem in this country and what's the appropriate solution in getting access to healthcare, I feel sad that I think the politicians, whether you're a Republican, Libertarian, or Democrat, or any of the politicians I've heard, they're all arguing about the wrong stuff. We should be talking about food quality and regulating the ingredients in food so that it's cheaper to buy vegetables than to buy soda. And, you know, and that we could shape, until we can address that, this will be a very difficult problem to solve. However, people like you doing these podcasts to get this information to the public so the public can be more aware of just how powerful our choices are at laying the groundwork for improving our health.
That's fantastic. And I know when I changed my diet, and I have to also put my hand up, it wasn't easy. There were plenty of times where
it's not easy.
Wanted to, and there's still times where the little thing pops up on my shoulder and says, oh, just have, you know, it's a party, just enjoy.
Oh, you know, absolutely. And so people watch me eat and go to parties and decline all this yummy food, and my response is, you know, after decades of intense suffering from my trigeminal neuralgia, ironically enough, I now see this as this tremendous gift, because if I have the wrong food, this is not for future benefit. If I have the wrong food in 6 to 8, 12 hours, 24 at most, my face pain, my sensation is abnormal. And I have these electrical face pains that are intensely, intensely painful. I can get so much pain that it becomes difficult to talk, difficult to swallow, difficult to function. And so fortunately, I've been able to connect the dots to realize that very close connection I have between what I eat and my quality of life.
And that's such a gift. I know it was years that I was kept being diagnosed with sinus infection. And finally, I found a physician who, trying to think of the test, but it was some sort of test to see, is there truly inflammation in these sinuses that keep getting quote unquote infected? Lo and behold, it turned out after a little bit of understanding, when I'm exposed to gluten, it mimics a sinus infection.
Oh.
You tap on the sinuses, it's like, ow, ow, ow. It feels like a sinus infection and everything else. And so now when I get these sinus infections, I think back and like, when and where in the past 48 hours could I have been accidentally glutened?
Yeah. And that's part of what I teach at our seminar is we talk about, helping people understand their biosensor. What are those subtle symptoms that you have that are an indication of more trouble to come? So I help people tune in to what are my biosensors? What are my subtle symptoms? And then I help them identify what's that checklist that I can go through, say like, okay, what food might have been my trigger? What toxins might have been my trigger? What stress, emotional stress, might have been my trigger? If I can get people, conscious of their sensors and conscious of their subtle symptoms, then they were on their way to steadily refining and improving their intervention, their own protocol.
That's fantastic, because when I understood my sensors, this is an exposure to something, not an infection or whatever, that had been treated as an infection for a while, it's, I think, actually sort of exacerbated my autoimmune problems. It was amazing to me then, once I had that first realization that it was in my sinuses, I started to notice other sensors throughout my body. And that just really was an exponential breakthrough for me. So thank you I'm glad we were able to talk about that.
Yeah.
We've talked about veggies. We've talked about the leafy greens, the sulfur greens, and the bright colored veggies and berries. I want to ask about the proteins, the meat proteins,
yeah,
and your view of that.
And I'm mindful that some people have a strong spiritual belief that's very important to them to be a vegetarian or vegan. So we do have guidance for them, gluten-free grains and legumes, cooked preferably in a pressure cooker. For the meat eaters, my guidance is, and actually also for everyone, you want to have a wide variety of foods. So I want you to have a wide variety of meats. So have poultry, have fish, have lamb, have pork, if that's, again, culturally acceptable to you, beef, bison. Again, according to your cultural values, that diversity of plant foods, both of the meats and of the plant species, adds to our metabolic resilience. Then, of course, I also talk about these radical things known as organ meats. So having liver once a week, having a heart ideally once a week, having oysters, mussels, clams, that these are superfoods that have a lot of creatine, carnitine, coenzyme Q. They'll have a lot of fat-soluble vitamins in them as well. They are a superfood. However, liver, very potent superfood, also has a lot of retinol or preformed vitamin A. If we have too little retinol, we have problems with blindness, retinal health declines, and a much higher rate of infection and cancers. If you have too much retinol, however, you also get into health problems with birth defects and a higher risk of fibrosis or scarring in the liver and lungs. So 6 to 8 ounces is sort of the perfect amount. I know some people were into telling their folks to have over a pound of liver every week. I think that will be a problem. I'm much more comfortable with that 6 to 8 ounce recommendation instead.
Right. Fantastic. A lot of people, I remember it from my childhood, but I have to tell you, it wasn't until my diagnosis and starting to read your work that I got back into it. I sort of, as a child, I had a lot of organ meats.
Yeah, we had liver once a week. And if you complained, you got a second piece. So by God, you ate your liver.
Did we have the same parents?
And we had head cheese. My mom boiled up the whole head and sort of ground it up. And actually, it was quite tasty. And I have my great grandmother's compendium of cookery and modern book of knowledge from 1890. And in there, there's a lot of recipes about liver and onions and preparing organ meats. And of course, the animals were harvested and you consumed all of the animal, snout to tail. So you boiled up the hooves in part of your soups, used the bones to make all sorts of soups and stews. And of course, you'd use the kidneys, the liver, the pancreas, the sweetbreads, the lungs, brains would have been a tremendous delicacy. And about a third of the what we consider offal or organ meat would have been the carcass that we now discard, that would never have been discarded.
Well, I want to just briefly touch before we take this next quick commercial break on your final one is seaweed. I want to know a little bit more about seaweed, like what type of seaweed?
Once again, variety is good. So there's a brown seaweed, which is kelp, a red seaweed, which is dulse, and green seaweed, sort of sea lettuce. But of course, there are many different varieties within each of those categories. My preference is that people have a variety of seaweeds, so you can get the benefits, again, from variety. Seaweed has a lot more iodine in it, selenium, and other trace minerals. And you know, most of us know that our bodies and our cells use vitamins to facilitate the chemical reactions. What they may not realize is that in those vitamins, a cofactor to the vitamin is a mineral. And so if you have plenty of vitamins, but you are mineral deficient, you still have problems with how you run the chemistry of life. So we need both the vitamins and the minerals. And the way we presently farm depletes the soils from their minerals. So the mineral content of our fruits and vegetables have been steadily declining.
We need to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I want to hit on that very important topic that's on all of our minds right now, Dr. Walls, and that's coronavirus. We'll be right back.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for inspired conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And tonight we're here with the amazing Dr. Terry Walls from the Walls Protocol. And I have just been mesmerized, Dr. Walls. So many of my questions after reading your book and watching your TED Talk just really have been answered here tonight. But I want to diverge on a topic that really is timely. Let's talk about the coronavirus.
Yeah. Well, you know, as the CDC and the government, various federal and state officials are talking to the public, they identify that if you're 60 or older, you're at higher risk. If you're taking a disease-modifying drugs that suppress your immune system, you are at higher risk. And so for those of us with an autoimmune disease, and many people are on some type of disease-modifying drug. And I also would say, anyone with a autoimmune illness, unless you have fully recovered with diet and lifestyle, you have immune dysfunction and you are probably at higher risk. However, I want to reassure you and your listeners that there are many things that we can do to lower the risk of having a severe exacerbation. You know, today, as I was driving home, Anthony Fauci was saying he expects a third of the country will be infected with this virus.
That's a lot of people.
You know, it's like 180 million people are going to be infected by the virus. Now, our young people will be, you know, they'll have mild disease. Middle-aged folks will have a little more serious illness. About 20% of those who have over the age of 60 or are on immune compromised, some sort of disease, autoimmune disease, or taking disease-modifying drugs, are more likely to have a more serious illness that may end up with respiratory complaints that may be severe enough that you end up seeing your physician, and you might need to have some supplemental oxygen, and some people may need to have breathing support. And the people who are at risk are older, more mature folks. So what I want to get out there for everyone is, so there are things that we can do to make sure our immune cells have the most effectiveness possible. In that list, one, be sure you're not eating any sugar and high glycemic foods. So when your blood sugar is high, that really compromises your immune cells. So get rid of the sugar, get rid of the pasta, get rid of the breads, eat vegetables and meat. If you're a vegetarian, eat whole gluten-free grains and legumes like black beans and rice. And you're a foot, so you have a vegetarian support. Know your vitamin D level. If your vitamin D level is low, again, that makes your immune cells much less effective. You know, on my website, terrywalls.com, there's a webpage in there where you could go order your own vitamin D level. And then you could see like, okay, my vitamin D level is good. I'm in good shape. Or if it's not in the top half of the reference range, then I would take some additional vitamin D supplementation. That would be really helpful. Another thing that you can do that, again, very, very helpful is having more fermented foods. We know that having a healthy microbiome really helps set the tone or the strength of our immune cells. So having more sauerkraut, more kimchi, fermented foods would be very helpful. Having enough fiber in your diet so you're passing an easily passed soft bowel movement every day. So to that end, I use inulin, I use sauerkraut, kimchi, and if I'm feeling constipated, I have bigger salads, more raw vegetables. If on the other hand, you have inflammatory bowel disease, then and you're having diarrhea and loose stools, you need less fiber, and so now it's more bone broths, more soups, more stews, and you're backing off on all the raw vegetables and fruit.
Fantastic. Now, what about things like vitamin C and other things like that that we've heard about?
So vitamin C would be very helpful. And it looks like in China, what I'm reading is that IV vitamin C was given. I want to remind people that we can't make our own vitamin C. Most animals can make their own vitamin C. Humans cannot. So this is perhaps why Linus Pauling indicated that if you have an acute viral infection, he recommended taking a high dose vitamin C orally. Certainly, I think taking a daily vitamin C supplement through all of this may be appropriate. And you could talk to your primary care doc about what dose might be appropriate for you. Somewhere between 100 and 500 milligrams may be appropriate.
Yeah. And as with all of this, be sure and check with your primary care doctor on all of this. But that's fascinating to know.
Yeah.
And of course, the usual washing hands and sanitizing your space. And
so, yes. And you can think about washing hands. It's so automatic to touch your mouth, your nose, your eyes. And we're doing that just automatically without even thinking about it. Washing your hands, soap and water, incredibly helpful. Avoiding crowds, avoiding plane rides, avoiding cruises, avoiding any activities where people are in close proximity. If I am 6 feet away from someone, it's much harder for the droplets, respiratory droplets of mucus that has the virus in them, to reach the next person. So that's why they want us to have at least 6 feet away between us and them. And this is why many countries around the globe and many states and cities are making the decision to close schools, to close down large public gatherings. There's, for example, the March Madness, I understand, is being played in an empty stadium.
Yeah, I've saw that about some soccer games that were being played not too long ago as well.
Here in the medical community, our conferences, you know, big international, national meetings, canceled. So the March meetings are canceled, the April meetings are canceled. My team and I were talking about some a big MS meeting in May that we'd like to go to, and that we're presenting our research at. And we're like, well, what do you think? We're going to go? We don't know.
That's mine. It's just taking it one day at a time, one new information at a time.
Take it one day at a time, and then make contingency plans for how we get our work done in these trying times.
And I want to say, trust our intuition. I don't know about you, but a couple of times I've like heard someone sneeze and my intuition is just swing a little bit to the right or, you know, just swing a little bit away or listening to that more.
And we've had to make adjustments with book presentations and the lectures, the book signs and book events that we were going to do because, I'm concerned about travel for everyone. I'm concerned about congregations. And so we keep having conversations every day. What events should happen, what events need to be rescheduled into the future.
Fantastic. And it allowed us to have you here on our video as
yes.
well as audio, everyone. Be sure and check it out on YouTube if you're listening to the podcast, and vice versa. You can listen to it as a podcast if you're watching us on YouTube. We have about 4 minutes left, Dr. Walls. Any final thoughts? And show us your book, your new updated book.
So here's the book. It's really quite beautiful. It has, even if you had the first book, I would pick up the new book because I have more updated info on diet. We talk about histamines, oxalates, FODMAPs. We talk more about fasting, time-restricted eating, periodic fast, ketosis, what labs to monitor, how to work with your primary care doc. I have more updates on neurorehabilitation, what's new in the world of electrical stimulation of muscles, metabolic resilience, emotional resilience, how we grow our internal motivation, how we help inspire others to go on this journey with us. A couple more things that I want them to know. We'll be recruiting people to my next study, which is a diet and lifestyle without drugs for the newly diagnosed MS patient versus taking drugs. Again, in the newly diagnosed MS patient or the newly diagnosed clinically isolated syndrome patient. And they can reach out to us at msdietstudy@healthcare.uiowa.edu. So I want to be sure, again, that's msdietstudy@healthcare.uiowa.edu. I have a huge in-person event, the Walls Protocol Seminar, that we host every summer. That'll be in August. Everything should be well quieted down by then. But we also have a virtual option where we teach people all these concepts. We have a beginner's track, a advanced track. We laugh, we sing, not necessarily in tune. We dance, not necessarily on the beat. And we practice the skills that we teach. So people come back year after year. It's such a fun, transformative experience. I'd certainly invite you and your listeners to check that out. And you can learn about that at terrywalls.com/seminar.
Oh, fantastic. That is just awesome. And I'll have those the email address as well as her website up at understandingautoimmune.com. So don't have to worry about, oh, I've got to replay that, get that. Just go over to understandingautoimmune.com to see all of Dr. Wells'
yes.
information. And I want to congratulate you on the book. I did get an advance copy, everyone. Yes, sorry. I'm thrilled that I got an advance copy. And it is amazing. It is amazing. You have updated it just wonderfully for all the latest information and questions. And I encourage everyone to go out and get a copy of her version, the new version, because it answered a lot of the questions I had, such as ketosis. That's a really, the keto diet, all of that is really a big word now.
Right. It's a big word now. And who should be in ketosis? What are the risks of ketosis? Who should definitely not be in ketosis? And if you're going to be in ketosis, how do we appropriately monitor it? And if you're going to go on a high-fat diet, how are you monitoring your lipids to know that it'll be safe for you?
Yeah, all sorts of great
stuff.
All
those things are
covered. I mean, it's just so much more information and guidance. So like she said, if you got the original book, go out and get the new book too, because it's just absolutely revised in a wonderful way. And so many timely topics. Thank you so much, Dr. Walls, for taking the time to be with us here on this episode of the Autoimmune Hour. We really appreciate you and all the work you've done for people with autoimmune.
Thank you.
Everyone, that's Dr. Terry Walls, and her new book is the Walls Protocol in the revised version. It's out now, and it's just going off the shelves like crazy, so be sure and grab your copy now, as well as visit us next week for another brand new episode here at the Autoimmune Hour. Also, visit us on social media. You'll find us, it's always at Understanding Autoimmune, whether that's Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, whatever. It's always at understandingautoimmune.com. Have a great week. Whatever your adventures, join me next week. Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets, is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio.